Hello, everybody. I welcome you today from Brussels, from Collectible Design Fair. And I'm today having the big honor to speak with Liv, who's one of the founders of Collectible Fair. She's really one of the major innovators, I'd say, and serial entrepreneurs in the scene, in the design, and I'd say also in the art scene. And we get into that very briefly. I would just like to quote, start with Collectible. This is how I met you exactly 8 years ago, because I remember that I was here for the first time that Collectible took place in 2018, and that was quite new. Let's start with that, and then let's get into all the other big projects that you started before Collectible, after Collectible, recently, long time ago, and and now we just get started. Hi, Liv. How are you today, 2 days after the opening of your eighth edition of Collectible, is that right?
It is our eighth edition indeed. Well, I'm good. You know, once it started, it's like rolling like a train. So it's the moment we can also enjoy. So, yeah.
You have over 100 exhibitors of the field of collectible design or art without function. I read this term as something.
No, functional art.
Oh, functional art. Yeah.
Art with function.
Art with function. See, it's such a new term to me that I thought it was interesting to say, yeah, it's like, you know, collectible art, which is seen from the art scene and from the other side around it would be. So it's design galleries, it's manufacturers, it's design studios.
No manufacturers.
No manufacturers. Okay, that's important to point out. Tell us a bit more on like the spirit of Collectible when you found it as an idea to who is it addressing, who is showing.
Sure. I mean, we started Collectible 8 years ago. I actually met my partner, business partner, Clélie Debeau, in Paris. It was quite funny because we literally saw each other for 2 minutes through a common friend who said, Clélie is Belgian, but she lives in Paris, and you're French. Actually, I'm Franco-Dutch, but French, and you live in Belgium. You should go for coffee. And we did. We went for coffee 2 weeks later, and Collectible was born. When I met Clélie, she told me about this type of design that is really falling between art and product design. So designers that are making unique pieces, very limited editions, or bespoke work, but they're not manufacturers, they're not product design, they're not meant to be on a large scale. And the way they produce, the way it's being sold is more akin to art. However, I was director of an art fair before I also created my own art fair, and it was always excluded to have functional art. You see very little fairs doing successfully selling design. So we thought we should put this functionality at the center as a main course, not as a side dish, I always say, and have this functional art being put really at the same level as art, as fine art. There's always this triangle, I tell people, with fine art on top, design and craft being at the bottom. And we want to level things up. It's nothing new, it's been done 100 years ago, it's keep being done, but we still need to do it. And our way of doing it is by creating a fair, because it's large scale, it's international, and it's the best we can do for the design community, this type of design community.
You and your own background is an art historian, so this is...
Totally not. I'm a
totally
lawyer.
Not.
Never studied art history.
We have to clarify all kinds of things that are like occurs in the internet and which are not true. All right, so you're a lawyer in the back at the beginning and not an art historian. That was not the beginning. And if you look back on like those 8 years, because we keep telling among ourselves, kind of like we would like to break up a bit of the genres to mix it more. We're doing design fairs next to fashion weeks. We do art shows in like, you know, nice beachy cities. We, you know, the scenes are trying to connect sometimes, and then in the heads it stays quite separated, you know, and it's still quite. Oh, that's the question, actually. If that changed a lot, in your opinion, is that moving towards like more, the art scene is more open towards design is more open towards architecture and fashion? Is
those not genres, really? I think, you know, ultimately it's human nature to stay a bit in their little hooks. Some people try to do, but I also think I don't want to mix design with art. I treat design the same way as art. I personally collect design the same way I collect art. And I want art collectors to collect design the same way they collect art. But I don't want to mix things, and I don't always agree. We have disagreement with people who think you should mix, but we all do things our own way. Because I think design, as I said, it should have the main spotlight. So it's important to dedicate moments for design. However, we are doing TEFAF, so we capture also part of the audience, which is good for our exhibitors, but we also are the only people doing something in Brussels at the moment. So the whole city is breathing design. There's an off program, a VIP program. People are adding exhibitions and events in Brussels. So that's really nice. And there's nothing else happening at the moment except this design. In New York, because we also do the fair in New York in September, that's different because we chose to be during Armory Show, which is the largest fair.
You're too quick. You're too quick for our listeners, I think.
I'm sorry.
No. Because this is exactly what you did. But so interesting because you are like so ahead of, you know, of the curve, I'd say. You know, it's like we are talking about Collectible in Brussels, but you extended to the U.S. and you had your first edition of Collectible in New York during Armory
And Fashion Week.
And Fashion Week.
Because you mentioned Fashion Week,
right.
And I wanted to tell
right.
you that's
no,
why.
I think also like, you know, big compliment of like how you. Because that was actually wrong in my head as well, you know, when we are talking about like the mixing of the genres, and you're so right. It's like really like putting the spotlight on every, you know, particularity of every scene and every bubble, so to speak. And I think this is, you know, it's very important to me that you said it that way. Going back to September, going to the first edition of Collectible in the U.S., which was quite successful, as I learned.
And, very successful.
I also read, maybe that's again wrong, but it was actually in your head already for quite some time.
True.
And you were actually planning on doing something in the U.S. even before Corona, and then things take a while until
exactly.
everything falls into places. So that was actually the case this September. Tell us a bit more about this.
Yeah, so Clélie and I, we met, 9 years ago, and our second trip was New York. I think we both didn't live in the same city or in the same country. We're talking on the phone every day. We didn't really know each other. I think we both share the same work ethics, which is why we're here today. We're both very hardworking, like good girls, I would say. And so we met in Milan, and then we met in New York. We just went, and I always say we were very ambitious. We went to all the big galleries, and we say, oh, the fair didn't exist yet. So we're like, we're going to do a fair in Brussels, and it's going to be this and that. Everything was in our mind, super clear, super laid out. But yeah, people were like, sorry, that person is not in the gallery. Sorry, not available, not answering our emails. So it didn't stop us. Then we got some exhibitors slowly coming to the fair, also from the U.S. 2019, we went back to the U.S., and then everybody was super enthusiastic, say, "What? We don't have Collectible here. We saw you on Instagram. We saw you in the press," because we also invested in press quite early on globally. And we put quite some efforts in having PR in the US. So that helped. And then when we went to New York, everybody was really, really enthusiastic and said, "You should bring the fair to New York. It would be amazing." But then it was November 2019. So then something slowed us down. I personally couldn't go to the US until 2023, I think, because I was not double vaccinated. I was single vaccinated because I got COVID in between. So we couldn't even go to the US as visitors. But then as soon as we went back, everything went really fast. We found a venue. We put it on track. And we announced a year ago, exactly day by day, at a press conference of Collectible Brussels, that we were expanding in New York. And now we are working on the second edition that's going to be in September. And we're launching next week the open call. So it's basically all year long, yeah, work.
Yeah, a lot of work. Because, let's just change a bit of the, exactly. Because you also, besides all this, there is Office for Art and Design, your entrepreneurial branch, so to speak. So you're also offering your knowledge and your expertise and your experience to other clients who are trying to put together fairs, events, all kinds of things. And I think it's very important, as you said, this like, you know, getting into something new as collectible was in the day, but having New York back in your head and then, for example, investing early on into PR and particularly in a different market than you're taking place. And I think this is like a long sight that a lot of people would never have really, you know.
It's funny because a lot of people, they think New York came out of the blue. They think we just, you know, woke up one day and we're like, oh, we're going to do a fair in New York. I mean, I did wake up one day and thought I'm going to do a fair on collectible design. That's true. But I didn't wake up one day thinking I'm going to do a fair in New York. We have to prepare the ground. We also involve, for example, with Julia Honey Montanez, who's a curator and design professional that she curated during COVID, one of our show. She also introduced us to her network in New York. I'm on the board of Future Fairs, which is a fair in New York since 2020. I was a director of Independent Brussels, but it's a New York-based fair. So I've also been involved actually in the New York scene when I was at Independent. So it was all, but it's also organic. It's not like I'm thinking, okay, we need to go to New York. It just felt right. It feels right. And it's funny because people ask me, so why are you going next? It's not like we're going on holidays. We're not hopping cities. And I'm not planning to open a fair in every continent. Although I got tricked by El Decor US. I'm always saying this as a joke because the journalist was asking me, so what's your next place? And I was like, yeah, no, I mean, two is enough. You know, I live in the Netherlands. I have a fair in Belgium.
You have a Biennale in Rotterdam, yeah, that I would like to come.
But then I said in a dream, you know, like just conceptually, not for real. I said Seoul, and then they announced Collectible is going to open in Seoul.
I read it in the internet. I was not, it's good that you were saying it.
I love K-drama and I love kimchi, but we're not yet opening in Seoul. Maybe when you say it, you have to do it, so.
Yeah, there is only the growth. But then that brings us to, let's hop quickly to the Biennale of Rotterdam, which is in its conception a bit different than the fairs, I'd say.
Very different.
But also happening in your head, I suppose that's like, you know, the city where you live. So it's been on your plate, I suppose, longer than just a quick, like, let's do a Biennale.
Yeah, no, it didn't arrive last week. It did take place last week. But again, many people always think, oh, wow, you suddenly do a Biennale. But I've been working on it for 2 years or more. But basically, I moved to Rotterdam 5 years ago. Soon it's going to be 5 years during COVID. My mom is from Rotterdam. My husband is from Rotterdam. I always hated that place. I thought it was a dark hole full of crackheads and just like dark, which it was when I was little. And but my husband got a job in Rotterdam. We moved there. And then I got completely flabbergasted by the amount of designer living there, and there's more and more. I knew, of course, Sabine Marcellis, Laurits Gallet, Chris Cabol, a couple of like well-known designers that have been involved in my in collectible and other things. But then I wasn't aware of the scale, like how many designers and how many are moving all the time. Barry Liulin, Sarah Rossmann, Pierre Castignola, who is Amsterdam-based, is now just moved to Rotterdam. And I launched, actually, during COVID, a non-profit called the Heiden Club, which is a permanent space, where there I'm mixing art and design on a pure voluntary base. So I curate show on design, mixing arts, but sometimes only art or only design. I invite curators, young curators often, to push them. And every opening we had, I saw all those people don't know each other. They all live in Rotterdam. They all come. Usually they study in Eindhoven and then they come to Rotterdam because Rotterdam is still quite cheap. There's a lot of space. There's still a lot of studio space. It's less expensive than Amsterdam. But at the same time, you have also the national support of stimulating funds. And also what I learned from designers during the Biennale, very good network of producers of glass, resin, wood. You can really produce in Rotterdam. So all this is a really fertile ground for designers to live there. However, nothing was ever done around design. There's a fair called Objects.
I may interrupt. Wallpaper was titling The Underdog of the Cities is now a capital of design after the first edition that you did the Biennale of Rotterdam.
Thank you, Wallpaper. Wallpaper spent 2 days. They interviewed everybody. But everybody was there. The zine announced us and we got a lot of international press and we didn't have a PR company. Yeah. So they just, we had support by the Rotterdam Partners. Is like they are the agency, PR agency from the city, and every people that wanted to come and that we invited because we knew them personally, they came. But just to come back to the how it happened, it was really, I think, something grassroots, and that's very important. I met at a opening at the Haydn Club Sarah Schulten, who is an amazing girl. We really got on. It's always like meetings, you know. I met Clilly, we got on. I met Sarah, we get on. And with Jelle, who's my graphic designer, creative director, is working on all the projects, the Haydn Club, he's here actually, on Collectible. We just, you know, the three of us, we also have a very strong sense of humor, so we're laughing all the time, and we had so much pleasure. We worked so hard, but at the same time, we really wanted to build something cool at our image, in the sense like, yeah, something grassroots, something very raw, no bullshit, we say all the time, no nonsense. We had talks that were very, yeah, no blah blah, about labor, about emotions and design, about the local scene. So it was a very honest, I think, edition. And yeah, we got viral. A lot of people came from Germany, from France, from, I don't know, the UK.
Everybody who didn't go like me felt like totally missing out and has to go again. So we have, you know, I'm trying to get like the, you know, the reset, a bit of like the recipe that you're doing. So, you know, having a scene or a creativity within the city is important. You know, having an eye on like the content, obviously, and themes, but also on the outside from the PR perspective is important. What else does it take that you get something off the ground? How important is the city? How important is the location? How important is the support of a city?
We got no support at all. Not a penny, nothing. So,
not in Brussels, not in Rotterdam?
Well, this year not in Brussels, but that's because of elections. It's different because Rotterdam, it's important to say, is very different from Collectible. Collectible is a commercial fair. People are paying their booth and they are selling. It's a business operation. Even though we are still extremely non-corporate. So that's what I also heard in New York from several people. They said, you guys are so uncorporate. We're professional, but we're not corporate. And we stay true to ourselves. We also such a small team that Clilly and I, we're mingling in every detail to the restaurant. The table now where we're sitting at the restaurant, I saw them in Rotterdam. Some people organized a dinner for the Biennale. And I was like, cool, can you bring the table in Brussels? But they're very weak. Can you reinforce them? And then they got reinforced, and a week later they came. And then we wrapped also some boxes, Balenciaga style. Everything is done very, very close to the heart. And very, very little support. So in Rotterdam, no one believed in us locally, and it made me even more determined.
So actually the money is usually not the issue to get something.
No, started. Money follows. I think if you have little money, you get more creative. Our graphic designer found a very beautiful font that was never used before. So we're the first people using that font. Everybody loved our graphic design from the Biennale. It was very simple, strong, black and white. But you know, then we got some flags from Belgium, from a non-profit with famous artists. We did a flag parade next to the Erasmusbrug. The bridge of Erasmus was very famous in Rotterdam. And we just put a huge flag. But we didn't have any poster campaign, but we ask Helmut Smits, who's an artist. He's always taking objects, random objects on the street, and he makes some like improvised furniture or installation. So we let him free, like carte blanche, to create some random stuff, like putting a piece of wood on the trunk, and then the poster just was widely hung on the street. So that's the kind of thing we did, you know, like very natural. But another thing that I thought was beautiful is that, I mean, I'm not that crazy. We had 25 venues and I didn't want to have 25 venues run by us. We actually had 5 venues. We did an open call. It was really hard because we got a lot of application for the open call. So we had to select only 20% of people applying, but it was still 50 or 60 designers. Then we had to find a venue, which was not easy, but we were very lucky because we found three venues, where we curate ourselves the shows. But then suddenly a lot of things popped out in the entire city. So we have this China Dutch organization. They rented a gallery and put up a show. They're called Char Art. We have L Decoration that did a really amazing show at Dune. They're interior designers. We had Spazio Viruli. They are now here at Collectible, actually. It's a young gallery. They put an amazing show, and etc. etc. So that's and also parties, but really nice parties, even really cool cafes. They put a show on chairs. So it's a very bottom-up spirit, and that's, I think, what made it very strong, very honest, and very raw, which you don't find in 2025 a lot of place, you know, this kind of honest, energetic, raw.
May I ask you, and then we're, you know, I don't want to hold you too long for all of this. If you compare the cities and the cultures of the countries that you're operating, speaking, Belgium is different than the Dutch, I suppose, is different than the US, and for sure it's going to be different than Asia. But is the same methodics, is the same tools, is it all about people we learn with you? So it's like really meeting people and meeting the right kind of people?
Yeah, it's very organic in a way, but I learned, I always say, becoming a mother almost 13 years ago and growing older. Made me really trust my gut feeling, which I think is the most beautiful thing that can happen to a woman. I think women don't always trust themselves. They're told by men all their life they should do things like that, they should believe that, they should behave like that. I have to say now I just don't give a damn. I do what I want and I trust my gut feeling. Sometimes I make mistakes. Sometimes I work, you know, in the wrong way or the wrong people, but almost never. And now I really know how, yeah, you know, we just do things organically, meaningfully. But also if things don't work, we don't force it, you know. If things stops, it's like my space, the Hidden Club, it was an encounter. The architect who did the scenography of Collectible in 2020, when I moved to Rotterdam, I didn't know anyone, so I invited him for a secret apéro. No one knew about it. It was COVID, you know, and he brought his girlfriend, now wife, and then they were like, you know, there's a space in Rotterdam that is empty. And they're architects always want to build. And they were like, but maybe you have an idea what we can do with it. And I came in and I saw a huge empty space of 2,000 square meters. And I was like, I see exhibition space, I see a cafe because I love coffee. So we're actually roasting coffee there. I'm seeing natural wine, I'm a hipster, I like natural wine. I see books because I love books. So Yelle, my graphic designer, actually I met him on Instagram and he's said, it's my dream to make a bookshop. I said, I have a space for you. I asked designers from Rotterdam to make furniture for the space. It's all commissioned. They're all Collectible designers. Then we opened studios to pay the rent and everything went organically. And we are maybe going to be kicked out. It's a real estate project. You never know. We've been 5 years now, almost 5 years, 4 years. But if it, you know, if we get kicked out, then it would have been beautiful. And it's over.
Else. As you were telling the story, it just sounds like, you know, so like, just do it, you know, just go ahead and do it. That's really what...
That's the Rotterdam attitude. Mm-hmm. So I learned that I was a very Rotterdam girl. Because, you know, in Holland, we say that in Rotterdam, you say you're not talking crap, but you're cleaning. So niet lullen, maar poetsen. So you're like cleaning. That's what Rotterdam people are doing. Money is consumed in Amsterdam. Politics is being discussed in The Hague, and in Rotterdam you're just cleaning. Hard working, you just do it. And that's, I think, something I also discovered. I told you when I was young I thought Rotterdam was a shithole. Now I really love it. I don't want to go anywhere else. So that's my home base. Rotterdam and New York are very similar. You know, there's a Hotel New York in Rotterdam, and there's now a Museum of Immigration that is opening in May, the Phoenix Museum, which is incredible. And when I was in New York and I did a road trip with my husband and son in New England, there's a lot of Dutch heritage, Dutch name. I mean, shouldn't be proud to have colonized America, though. But there is this kind of no bullshit, hardworking Protestant spirit of even chit-chatting with people is always because, yeah, you're doing trade, so you need to be commercial, like a merchant. That's, I think, is still in America very strong. So I feel very comfortable in New York. I have to say. That's something I didn't expect, but I feel at home. The American, at least New York people, they know bullshit, you know? You want something, you just do it. So it's been very easy to work in New York, I have to say, in that respect. I feel very comfortable, but it's also very personal. Maybe you feel more comfortable in Paris than, I don't know, you're German or Austrian?
Vienna, Austria.
Sorry, is, yeah. Vienna is my favorite city. I want to die in Vienna. It's where I'm going to retire.
It's known for quite morbid history as well, so it might be a city for dying. I think it's also something into, sometimes you need to change, you know, sometimes you need to move on, sometimes you need to discover
always.
Something else, you know, and sometimes there are great cities, but you can leave them for their being and, you know, go someplace else, start something new, and nothing gets lost.
I'm really into that. I mean, I lived in Antwerp for 15 years and I was in love with Antwerp, like I was in love with a man or a woman. I mean, it was really like amazing, but Antwerp changed a lot. And it's funny because I was talking yesterday with Dan Tholey from Matter and Ship. We know each other from Antwerp long time ago. And the Antwerp we knew in 2000, 2010, 11 is gone. That Antwerp doesn't exist anymore. And you have to learn to leave. And the Rotterdam of before was really grim. But now it's super energetic. So I think also the energies of cities are changing, moving, leaving, coming. I mean, I grew up in France. I was living in Paris before. I think Paris in the year 2000 was pretty boring. Like end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000. But now I hear from everybody, Paris is a place to be. There's a lot of designers booming, much more experimental. It's still very traditional as France, but there's also a sort of really cutting edge movement. So yeah, we have to learn how to listen to cities and challenge them as well.
Last question, do you think you make an impact on the cities, obviously on the design scenes where you're active? Do the cities change for the better? Do you think that Brussels changed a bit for the scene, for collectible?
I think
so. Is that
so
too much to ask?
Yeah,
that,
I don't know. Yeah. I think, I'm not sure. I mean, there's also a change of generation. So I think in Brussels, I mean, the galleries that were there at the beginning, they're no longer there. Or they changed, but we have a new generation. So that's really nice, right? For example, here, Espace Aigo, Nicolas Zanoni, and Ori Oresson, they did a show for collectible, and I think they are some of the most talented people. I love the work. They did a crazy show at a new space called Asifos that is opening during collectible, and the way they treated the show is really something that no one did before with the design. Like really, it's the universe, all the little details. It's not an exhibition. It's really getting into some weird universe. And they told me, we are now collectible design in Brussels. They're young people, but they are the one, yeah, making it at the moment. And that's also interesting. In Rotterdam, I saw we had a committee of hosts, and we had different generation. We had Chris Kabel, Marga Weyman, she's a designer, but also into fashion and fabric. She's born and bred in Rotterdam, and she knew the Rotterdam from the 80s and 90s that she loved. She was telling us about a different Rotterdam. And then Sabine Mercedes, she came in 2012, which is already a while ago. And she's not from Rotterdam initially. She grew up in New Zealand. But now there's no one who's more Rotterdam than Sabine. And now it's Gallet. He's Austrian. Austrian. Well, half German, actually.
All right. It's right.
Austrian. He says that Rotterdam became his home. Anna Agat Janssen, she's Danish. And she also said, like, yeah, it's not 100% my hometown, but that's where I am now. And that's where my friends are. This is where I'm working. And they all came at different times in Rotterdam. And I think it's the addition of people, but you need to bring people together. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm not doing much. I'm just bringing people together and showing it to the world.
Thank you for doing it, Liv. Thank you for this interview. Thank you very much for having me.
Did I speak too long?
No, it's wonderful.